We are live. Welcome to Elevate Today podcast, where we elevate one podcast at a time. Please introduce yourself and your specialty and what you do.
Perfect. So first off, I wanted to thank you for having me on here. I've watched some of your podcasts before, and you always do a great job. So
thank you.
It's an honor to be here. My name is Dino Del Mastro, and I work day-to-day as a doctor of chiropractic and sports therapist. So I work with a lot of athletes and a lot of probably the bread and butter of who I see are weekend warriors who just have an injury or something that's bothering them that they want to recover from. So they can get back to doing their best at different sports and different activities that they love doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so cool. You are one of the most legit in your industry, and how you've niched yourself to be specialty with fighters.
Yeah,
like now you do all pretty much pro fighters or just very serious athletes, right?
Yeah, for sure. So I always tell people, you know, my passion project is definitely working with the pro athletes. I mean, they're fun, they perform well, you get to see them go out and do the things that they're best at. But honestly, the bread and butter of our office just started as what I call like weekend warriors. So I would put both of us into that category. So people who live a normal life, have a normal job, but then they have some physical ambition that's just requires a little bit more in terms of injuries, recovery, things like that. And that's kind of what I started my practice with. Mm-hmm. And now it has evolved quite a bit to where I'm seeing lots of different professional athletes and in particular mixed martial artists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's how I found you. So yeah. We knew each other before because a lot of mutual friends. Correct. But like we were talking about, we were destined to meet just with how many people we know of the same. Yes. But I had a whole other intention. I knew that you were the chiropractor to the fighters.
Yeah.
And I never told you this, but my whole thinking was, man, if this guy's adjusting champs, then I want him to adjust me. Like, why can't I do that? You know, anything is possible.
Totally.
And it's so cool because I got adjusted by you and now you're on this podcast. Yeah. And those little things excite me and encourage me to play bigger, you know.
Yeah.
Like why not interview Absolutely. A chiropractor of all these professional fighters.
Yeah.
And really like understand what you know.
Exactly.
What is very natural to you.
Yeah And it was nice having you in by the office because it gave you a little bit of a taste of what I do. You know, there's a lot of different types of practitioners, you know, even within the chiropractic profession itself. So, you know, there's all kinds of different doctors. There's pediatric, there's geriatric, there's orthopedic doctors. For myself and my group at Los Gatos Sports Chiro, we do a lot of sports and a lot of rehab. So a lot of people on a normal visit will come in, you know, an old school, like more traditional type of chiropractor, which there's lots of them that do a great job and, you know, people like them a lot. But for us, we have lots of tools in our toolbox. So as a chiropractor, we have the option of doing like sports therapy, like sports massage. Yeah. They call it manual therapy, exercise rehab. And depending on what type of chiropractor that you want to be and what type of career you want to pursue, you can choose to use one or some of those tools. Or at our office, we really try to use all of those tools. And that's why you saw even one of the devices that we used on you, actually, that we scanned you with, Hannah, was a really cool, I mean, it makes my job even easier, digital device. It was called the Kinotech, where we had you stand up and we did like, you know, squat and bend forward and move your arms. And all that measured your ranges of motion, which that's been a really fun tool that I've been using in my practice a lot recently also, where I can objectively, each time someone comes in, say, you know, so whether it's now or if you come in a year from now, I can have just objective numbers on how well that your body's moving. And then I can utilize that to help prescribe more specific exercises, stretches, things like that. So we try to make sure we're taking a look at the whole athlete versus just, my neck's a little bit tight. Okay, crack, crack, high five, you're good. So that's what we do at our office.
Yeah, you guys have a lot of cool after features that a lot of chiropractors don't do. And I've been getting adjusted from a chiropractor since I was a kid, since I knew what it was. And they have just pretty much not the bare minimum, but they kind of keep it very simple.
Absolutely.
And that's, you don't need a lot. Like you can adjust once you know how. But I like how you guys did the scraping. What is that?
Instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization. So it's a big, big word, but it actually comes from Eastern medicine. And a lot of these things, they come from tradition and things. I even had some students that were in my cohort who were of Asian descent, and they said, hey, we did this. Like my grandma, if I would fall and bump my elbow, would use like a coin or a spoon and kind of scrape around that area. And back then, maybe these were things that people knew were helpful, but they didn't really know exactly why. And now they have a lot of research and they've done a lot of work to see exactly what that's doing. Mm-hmm. And so now we incorporate it. And of course, whenever there's evidence, there's people who want to make money off of it.
Yeah.
So now there's different companies. The most common one that our patients have heard of before, it's called Graston. That's like a well-known, but that's simply the name of someone who bought a bunch of these metal bars. And they said, okay, well, these are Graston tools. So these are my tools. So it's kind of funny with the way techniques and the way medicine works, even legally, with what you can and cannot say. So if I'm using metal bars, but they're not specifically Graston tools, I have to just call it instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization, which is obviously a mouthful. But yeah, that's the technique of the scraping.
And the science of that, you're getting blood flow there to spread and heal the injury.
Correct.
Inflammation.
So when I took it, and it is really cool how there's so little that we still know about the human body, right? And in medicine and sports therapy, there's very little black and white. There's a lot of gray in between. And even when I was in school, which was 13 years ago, we always said that we were using that technique to break up scar tissue, mm-hmm. right? Makes sense. You know, you're injured, you scrape, a lot of times you feel like lumpy, bumpy. It feels like almost sand in there. And we're trying to break down that scar tissue so that you can move better. Well, what the research came out with was some outrageous number. It's like well over 1,000 pounds that it would actually take to crush scar tissue. So we're clearly not crushing scar tissue with it. So now what we have learned is that we're simply mobilizing. So on the surface of our skin, we have our skin. Underneath of that, we have some fat and we have fascia. And mm-hmm. fascia is like saran wrap, like a big connective tissue suit that goes over top of our muscles. So what we found is that doing the scraping promotes blood flow, which is why we see a little bit of pink, a little bit of redness in there, but it also gets our skin, our fascia, and our muscle just kind of like moving together a little bit more nicely. So that's, mm-hmm. again, one of the techniques that we used on you in our office that mm-hmm. we like to work with our athletes and our patients on.
Yeah. And it's wild to me. A lot of these, especially like Chinese medicine, mm-hmm. they're so easy to do, yeah. or they're so like, you don't need to buy anything really. Totally. It's yeah. very effective to do these methods. You really just have to be, you have to take the time to study what you're doing and know yes. why you do it. Just like being a chiropractor, like you adjust a bunch of people, you don't need to inject them with anything. Like right. sure, things get complicated. Right. I don't know the science there, but it's like humans can heal each other yes. without adding medication, without yes. like changing these drastic things like we see in the pharmaceutical health industry.
Right.
So I have a bunch of questions. The one I have right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Is, how do you place yourself with, like, as a doctor? Mm-hmm. But I noticed doctors and, like, pharmaceutical health, mm-hmm. they don't really say, oh, you have a messed up spine. I think you need to go to a chiropractor. Correct. They'll say, oh, you have a messed up spine. You're going to have to do surgery right. and get cortisol injected in your spine.
Right.
And I so believe in the holistic, which partners with chiropractor.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you feel? Like, how do you place yourself?
Yeah, so it was a lot more divided before. Things are really starting to change a lot now in the medical field. And I think there's really a time and place for both, right? So I've been practicing as a doctor of chiropractic, which also, you know, one of the things we hear is, well, that's not a real doctor. I don't care. I'm a chiropractor. I help people and I love what I do. So I don't really care so much about that. Now, the difference between what a medical doctor and the way that they would go about working on a patient and the way that I would go about working on a patient really nowadays should be working more and more together. And I think we're going to see that trend starting to happen. When I was in school, it was a lot of, well, you have to choose whether you're going to see a medical doctor who, like you said, they're usually going to do an injection, they're going to do surgery, they might do medication, or you're going to see a chiropractor who is going to try to go about a more natural method of doing that. Now, in my 13 years of working as a chiropractor, I have seen, and again, the research shows that most people want to see a chiropractor for back or neck pain. We call it SRDs, spine-related mm-hmm. disorders. So the majority of our new patients, sure, we get some people who have their wrist hurts or their elbow hurts or their shoulder hurts sometimes, but most new patients who seek care from a doctor of chiropractic are coming in for a spine-related disorder. Mm-hmm. In my 13 years, and you know, at our office, let's just say we're seeing somewhere between myself and my associate doctors around 100 patients a week, I have probably sent less than a dozen total in for surgery. The majority of the patients, the vast majority, 12 or less, I have been able to work on and work through using stretches, exercises, lifestyle modifications. One of the things that I certainly, as a chiropractor, there are some that are experts at it, but I don't consider myself one, nutrition. So talking about a lot of just how someone lives and what things that they can do on their own, the vast majority of the time are going to clear up these spine-related disorders. And that's kind of a problem with the division where when I took a postgraduate course, which I'll tell you about in a minute here, but they talked about it. They called it the grocery store of shopping for patients now where, you know, let's say your neck hurts. Let's make a list of who are some options you could see. You could see an acupuncturist. You could see a chiropractor. Mm-hmm. You could see your primary care. You could see an internal medicine, orthopedic surgeon, a neurologist. So right now it's kind of at this point of, okay, well, who is the best person to see you right away? And if you see a primary care doctor, they are much more likely to want to take imaging. Like if you see the doctor, they might say, okay, Hannah, I'm going to prescribe you ibuprofen. Let's get an x-ray on there just to double check. We see some changes and maybe I'm going to send you to a specialist. And in some cases that is necessary. In my career, it's been 12 in 13 years. Most of the time, x-rays, medication, being seen by a neurologist and orthopedic surgeon, they're not necessarily. However, there have been cases, like I mentioned, there's around 12 of them in my career that I have seen that I've been, and we are trained as doctors of chiropractic to say, you know what, there are some red flags here. This is a little bit out of my scope of practice. Unfortunately, I don't think this is something that I would be able to help you with. And that is where we kind of triage and send to a primary care physician, a neurologist, an orthopedic surgeon. So it is nice, at least I know more now on the doctor of chiropractic side. We have been taught on what is and what is not in our wheelhouse. Yeah. And I think that on the medical side, it's starting to get better about what it is that a chiropractor, and I'll put us in a very similar category, a doctor of physical therapy would see. And I recently took a course at the University of Pittsburgh. And it was so cool because it was the first time I was like, we can all get along. The course was taught by medical doctors, PhD, doctors of physical therapy, and doctors of chiropractic. There were 60 of us in the cohort, and it was at University of Pittsburgh through their physical therapy department. And if you were a chiropractor, a nurse practitioner, physician's assistant, or a doctor of physical therapy, you were eligible to take the course. And in our course, we had 60 students who you had to have been practicing for 10 years. So it was a more experienced bunch. And there were about 40 doctors of physical therapy and about 20 chiropractors. And we all, when our professors were asking questions, we were all on the same page. So it was really cool. And University of Pittsburgh is, you know, almost like a shout out for them. I think that they get what the change needs to be. They are understanding and they call the program a certification for a primary spine practitioner. Because they said, going back to what we mentioned earlier, that grocery store of, well, who do you see when your back or neck hurts? Well, University of Pittsburgh says the answer is you should see a primary spine practitioner. It's like a primary care physician, but all they do is see spine injuries. So that's what we've been working on. And hopefully over the next several years, we're going to start to see more and more of the medical doctor and more of the mainstream medicine profession recognizing that and saying, well, hey, you know, unless there's a major, major red flag here, let's have you work with a primary spine practitioner like myself or like a doctor of physical therapy who could most likely get you out of pain and get you living a pretty normal, pretty healthy life without imaging, medication, injections, or surgery.
Wow. So it is evolving. Like doctors, chiropractors, they are working together to find the common ground to help people.
Yes. And Hannah, it's really exciting for me and I'm really proud of our profession. I'm really proud of also the physical therapy profession, because even when I was in school, there were pretty much, if you're going to be a chiropractor, you're going to open a private practice like I do. And that was my dream and that was my goal. And that's I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
But now there are chiropractors in a lot of different hospitals. The biggest one, I mean, the VA hospital, which is fantastic. So the Veterans Association Hospital Administration, for people who are, you know, coming back injured soldiers or people who potentially just went through, you know, some deployment where they got hurt and they're having back pain. They are hiring doctors of chiropractic, and they definitely have some favoritism towards these primary spine practitioners. hand over fist, because the research is there that is showing that if we work with the medical model, we could get these people a lot better, a lot faster, with more minimally invasive procedures, such as, you know, avoiding, again, medications, injections, or surgery. So
primary spine doctor, is that a chiropractor, or is this a whole new thing?
Yeah, so it's a whole new niche, which, again, right now, and I think it's going to catch, and I think we're going to start to see it more and more. I think other universities are going to start having these educational certifications. But right now, my title, so I am a doctor of chiropractic first and foremost, but I have advanced training so that I am a certified primary spine practitioner.
Okay.
Now, to be eligible for that class, as I mentioned, I think it's only been around since 2020, so like 3 years. You have to be, the majority of my classmates were doctors of physical therapy and doctors of chiropractic, and you have to have been practicing for 10 years to be eligible to take the class, because they want to get people with a little bit more of real world experience. But now I know that University of Pittsburgh is also extending that to nurse practitioners, physician's assistants. I'm sure medical doctors can hop on that too. So it's a really good integrated program, but right now the bulk of the people who are taking this course to become a PSP, a primary spine practitioner, are physical therapists and chiropractors. So again, two career choices that they look so similar, but they've had so many turf wars like over the years. It was really refreshing for me to be in a room where I'm like, oh, okay, now we just have a bunch of people who just want to help people without using drugs and surgery. Can't we all just get along?
Yeah,
so it was a really good opportunity for me to learn there.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
That makes me really happy, because when I hear about like spine back injuries, it almost feels like it's just kind of downhill. Just be careful. And then there's cortisol. You use surgery and cortisol. And then I always say, go chiropractor. But unless you are a spine doctor, there's just so much that you don't understand. Absolutely. And it's great to be able to go to one person and just that spine.
Correct.
Are we injuring our spine more than we were before?
I would say so, yeah. So there's been a lot of podcasts where people, and I like this analogy, in the 90s, you know, that was when smoking was cool. Like everyone's smoking cigarettes, and it was causing all these problems with healthcare later on. And in a lot of recent podcasts I've listened to, they say sitting is doing to our healthcare what smoking did in the 90s. So now, so many people just from sitting the majority of the day for their job. I mean, we live in Silicon Valley, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many people do you know that are just a cubicle dweller who they're just pounding away at their computer all day long, just sitting, not moving? And then unfortunately, a lot of these people also take their work home with them. So then they have to sit on their laptop and, you know, maybe they're kicking their feet out on the couch and working. So our body as humans was not meant to be in any one position for an extended period of time, whether it's sitting. The other group that we do tend to see are people who oftentimes, you know, use their body too much. So when I see someone with a lot of back pain, it's generally either someone who doesn't move enough, and they're typically our engineers, our IT, our people who are just working at a desk a lot, or there's someone who's, you know, bent over working on a roof, doing construction, things like that. But yeah, sitting is really causing a lot of problems nowadays, because not only is it a lot of wear and tear on our spine. So we'll do a little trick here. So just sitting here, Hannah, when we talk about our core is going to be like basically everything, all the muscles that attach to our spine, right? So let's start from, let's say, from the waist to here. So right now, as hard as you possibly can, flex your abs. It's like almost a little bit awkward, right? Like you can do it, but you have to like, but when we're just relaxed, we're not sitting there flexing our abs, right? So they're disengaged. Okay, right now, flex your low back. Like you're trying to show off like muscles in your low back. See, we both had to move, right? Because we're not naturally sitting like that. Last one is one of the biggest protectors of our low back is our glutes, both our glute max and our glute medius. Now, sitting here right now, do you feel like your glutes are like really like strong and really turned up? To get them to actually fire, you have to kind of change your position, right?
Yeah.
So while we're sitting, our entire core is just, it's like a flat tire. So it's there, but that's not protecting our spine. So what's keeping us upright right now is basically we're a big hunk of muscle and connective tissue just sitting on our spine. So because of this all day, all this wear and tear is just on our spine. And it's just getting compressed, and it's getting smushed down, Whereas when we're upright and when we're moving around, we have our abs, we have our low back, we have our glutes that are helping to protect our spine. So when we're sitting, that's causing a major problem, again, because we're in one position for an extended period of time, but also our muscles are not helping us at all like they do when we're up and moving around.
Okay. So. Simple solution. And, yep. You know, that's why a big heart of a lot of things I do is promoting local businesses, not small businesses, but people really working on doing their own thing, because that is kind of the solution to not sitting down all day.
Absolutely.
In a weird way. I'm like, I just don't really care to promote the sit down for 8 hours. Like, I don't. But people trying to do this harder, different route, they're getting a lifestyle that can actually promote health where you're not sitting, you're not pretty much indoors all day.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's good to be up and moving. And the more that you can, you know, at the end of the day, the more that you can change position. So if you have a job like, you know, we're going to sit, we're going to talk for what, an hour, maybe a little bit more. Mm-hmm. We'll see, depending on the questions.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, after that, we're going to stand up and we're going to walk around and I'm going to go back to my office and I'm going to be standing and working on patients. And then I'm going to be demonstrating exercise with my patients. And oftentimes, probably even when you were there, I'm on the floor crawling around and showing exercises and things like that. So at the end of the day, our body wants change. And for anybody who's listening or for anybody who's watching who maybe you're like, oh, I'm nuts. I can't change. I'm just stuck sitting here at my desk all day. Some quick tips that you can do. I mean, even I have a lot of my patients set an alarm on their phone that goes off like every hour. Mm-hmm. Just stand up, bend backwards, bend forward, give yourself a little twist. Or if you have the opportunity, if you're working from home, even if it's a much more comfortable position, like sitting on your couch, sitting with your feet up, like, yeah, that's great. But again, after about an hour of that, take your laptop, pick it up and go to the kitchen and just work on your laptop standing at your kitchen countertop for a little while. Again, our body doesn't want to stay in one position for an extended period of time. And a lot of things, like you had mentioned, when you talk to people who have these kind of chasing their own dream and chasing their own passion types mm-hmm. of job, they do have the opportunity to, I'm not just sitting all day, I can stand. Yeah. Or, oh, I have to make a run over here. Oh, let me walk down the street and get this. So if you are someone who has a job, you know, and you're stuck at a computer and, you know, great for you, that's hard. I couldn't sit at a computer all day. Just try to set an alarm for yourself and every hour stand up and just move a little bit or change positions if you have the opportunity to go from sitting to standing. I know nowadays they have a lot of those sit-stand desks.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are great. And if you just change what position you're in every hour, it can decrease a lot of these spine-related disorders that we talked about.
Dang. And then what you were saying were, what if another thing we could do is tighten the core, like mm-hmm. while we're sitting down? Would that contribute for that hour where we're still sitting?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, I always joke, because I do this with all my patients. I say, okay, let's do this here together, Hannah. Let's sit up, let's get on your computer. Okay, we're gonna keep good posture here, right? So, and when I say good posture, generally, I like these T-Rex arms. I want my elbows at 90 degrees. I want my hips mm-hmm. at 90 degrees. And right now my knees are a little bit tucked in. I'll bring my knees out to 90 degrees, ankles. So ankles, knees, hips, elbows are at 90 degrees, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're typing, we're doing our work, right? Okay, you get a super stressful email. We do this right away. And now all of a sudden, from this position, I cannot flex my abs. I can't flex my low back. I can't even clench my glutes if I want to from this position. So as much as, you know, it does help to be mindful, but I tell people, you know, realistically, you're working. Wait, what do they want me to do? And now my whole core is shut off. I'm in this human cashew position and I can't fire any of those. So trying to maintain that 90-90-90 position is going to be helpful. But I think just being mindful of trying to change your position every 60 minutes is the most realistic, because I know, I mean, even my previous assistant, who she was awesome. She's an athletic trainer. Her name was Olivia. And her and I had this bond because we worked like basically in the same room, like one-on-one for such a long time. And I'm rarely on a computer, but there were several times that she was like, your posture is the worst, because I would literally be doing this on there. And again, it's just because I'm like, well, I just have to fire off this email real quick. And then, oh yeah, you're right. Boy, what am I doing here? So being mindful is good, but I think realistically, as soon as someone gets that stressful email, they're kind of like, it all just goes to crap from there.
I like that then. So do what you got to do. Solution, every hour, set a timer, and move your body.
Change position.
Neck turns, exactly. Up and down.
Yep, stand up, bend forward, touch your toes, bend backward, twist, side bend. You know, just saying that there would probably take you 30 seconds, and I do think that would save a lot of wear and tear on a lot of people's spines.
Okay, and then the other half, and this one's personal, but the people that overwork a lot, but aren't in a place to just do less work. Like my grandpa, he was construction. I mean, he's a hardworking Mexican man. Just he loves it. Yeah. So he's bent over. You can't really tell him to stop working. So he ended up getting, I believe he gets cortisol in his spine.
Sure.
So what's a solution for construction workers?
So I would say with that, Hannah, my best advice is can be that if you are stuck in one position for an extended period of time, you want to try to move in the opposite position of that. You know, it's kind of like when we're on the highway, and if we notice, oh man, after I go 50 miles per hour, my car starts to shift to the right a little bit. So after a while, we're gonna start to wear out the tires on that side. Now, with our spine and with just our general musculature, if we have a job where we're stuck bending forward for an extended period of time, you wanna make sure that you're doing some backward bending movements. Mm-hmm. So what my favorite go-to one is if someone tells me they're bent forward, and even, you know, with one of our common interests, a sport like jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. it's kind of similar to that, right? Like you start, you're okay, we're gonna start from standing, we're in this crouch over neutral position, right? I get you in my guard, I pull in, I'm kind of also in this neutral position.
Yeah.
I'm in your guard, you pull me forward, I'm kind of in this bent forward position. So my favorite two exercises, my go-to little like must do if you have a job where mm-hmm. you're bending forward a lot, or if you have a sport or an activity that you're bending for a lot, is me cobras, just where you're letting your legs, your hips all just go totally limp, keep them on the floor, and just pushing your back up off the ground and arching and looking up. Because again, if I took a metal bar and I just slowly bend this forward all day, at some point it's gonna bend and break, right? So it's important to try to bend it back to keep that spine neutral.
Cobra.
So cobras are really good. I also like Supermans. So where it's the same thing, except you're active. So my legs, my chest, my body are on the ground, and you squeeze your glutes and squeeze your low back and just lift your upper body and lift your lower body up off the ground at the same time. Now we're activating those muscles that are being lengthened and therefore being weakened throughout the day. Mm-hmm. So if someone's stuck, like your grandfather, mm-hmm. doing a job where they are bending over all day long, I tell them, bend backwards. And we can get into more details about specifics to help out your grandfather, but I think that generally speaking, it's, you know, making little changes that make a big difference for mm-hmm. most people.
I love hearing that. These like answers are so simple. We just don't do them. We don't do them. Know better, but because it's like, yeah, you're right. Why else wouldn't we just pull back and do opposite?
Exactly. And sometimes just, you know, I tell people these things and they're like, boy, that's so silly. Genius. Like, that's so intuitive. Like, I should have just been doing that on my own. And then sometimes patients will even tell me, like, you know what? Every time my back hurts, I do that. I find myself on the floor doing this position. So our bodies are very, our bodies know us best, and our bodies know what's good and what's bad for them. Sometimes we just have to have like a little reminder. And as a doctor of chiropractic and primary spine practitioner, I tell people that the biggest value of working with me, like, sure, this is going to help. Let me rub your back. Is that going to help? Of course it's going to help. Mm-hmm. Let me do an adjustment on you. Is that going to help? Sure. In most cases, it's going to help. But it's the guidance that I can give you. What stretches, what exercises should you be doing more of? Mm-hmm. What things in your life should you be trying to do a little bit less of? Mm-hmm. And what just daily modifications can we make to just keep you feeling your best? That's really, when people come to my office, I'm like, that's the biggest value. That's what you're paying for. Mm-hmm. Anybody can massage you. Anybody could crack you. But having someone who's going to be able to give you, like, okay, you're brushing and flossing, I call it. You know, if I were a dentist, mm-hmm. when you leave the office, I'm going to give you dental floss and a toothbrush. As a primary spine practitioner, I'm going to give you exercises and lifestyle modifications to help you help yourself out. Mm-hmm. So
that's really good. Thanks, So you shouldn't just go to a chiropractor if you're injured, right?
Correct.
That was my situation. Did mm-hmm. I say I was hurting at the time, or was it because I had a tournament?
I think you had a competition coming up, and I think you're just like, well, like you said earlier, hey, I know that you work with a lot of these big names. There's got to be something to what you're doing, so let me come by and check it out. So that's a great question, and that's actually one I've shied away from earlier in my career, because my biggest thing was in – even previously when I had worked in health and fitness as a personal trainer, mm-hmm. And I'm sure you probably have some stories and can relate to this a little bit yourself, I never wanted to come off as a salesman, right? Like, nobody likes going somewhere where they're like, oh, this person's just trying to get my money. That's all they care about. So early in my career, I was very shy to say, oh, you're feeling better. Oh, that's great, Hannah. So you have my phone number, call me when you need me. I am still A-okay with that. And that's probably 50% of my patients will high five. And, you know, I see them a couple times a year when they're hurt. What I have seen over the years, and now what more and more research is showing, is that if you come in for a tune-up, most of my recovery, most of my maintenance patients, they'll come in once every 4 to 6 weeks. So if you're just an average person who likes to work out, 4 to 6 weeks, you can come in, Hannah, and say like, yeah, how you doing? I feel great. Body's really good. I'm going to watch you move. I'm going to watch you bend side to side, bend forward, backwards, do a squat, do a push-up, do a plank hold, do a lunge. And based on what I'm observing, I can work on certain muscles that are maybe overactive and then try to show you exercises to get fired up some muscles that might be a little bit underactive that are going to help you out. And then from there, you know, it's like anything else. Getting a massage is never going to be a bad thing. That's always going to help you out. So earlier on, I was a little bit more hesitant to recommend continued care because I'm like, oh, I don't want someone to say, well, you know, I saw this chiropractor and now I have to see him for the rest of my life. Well, you don't. But if you can and you have the luxury of coming in to see me once a month or seeing someone like me, I'm absolutely going to help tune you up. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why also on social media, you tend to see the mixed martial artists, you see the same guys coming in every week.
Yeah.
Now, why is that? Well, you know, if you're bringing your car in for a tune-up once a month because, you know, you drive to work and to the gym, then a tune-up once in a while is really all you need. But if you're a race car driver, you probably need someone to get under the hood more than once a month and make sure everything's firing at all cylinders. I have a guy who I need to get him on video saying, because he says it every time. He says, Dino, every time I come in, I feel like I can't train tomorrow. Like my body's so beat up and so tired that I'm just done. And he said, and then every time I leave, I'm like, oh, I got this. I can get in there and train again tomorrow. So that's another one of the added benefits. And it's not always necessarily just getting him pain-free and fixing an injury. A lot of it is just recovery and just tune-up visits so people can get out there and continue doing what they love doing. So
Yeah, you're really crucial to like a professional fighter because these professional fighters train hard so much, and chiropractor is like that one thing where you're like, if you're good there, then you can keep doing what you love. Exactly. But I think that's kind of what changes someone like a professional or someone that takes their practice very seriously and someone that just trains for fun.
Oh, big time.
Like, you got to get ready to be back to square one to train hard.
Yeah.
And that's why anyone that is in fighting or training, the kind of way we move our body, we gotta make sure we're good.
Absolutely.
Like, we get a lot of attention on our spine. And I'm sure you see that, like, being an athlete yourself, it's like, it's kind of good because we're moving a lot, we're stretching a lot. But it's like those little things that if you had a doctor, a chiropractor look at you and be like, all right, try this. It's like, now you're a better fighter too.
Yeah.
You feel better, you're a better fighter, and you're ready to go, like, sharper than everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, you know, both you and I, we train. So, like, we leave, and after practice, you know, either our body's tired, we're going to have little bumps and bruises. Maybe I jam my finger one day. There's almost always, like, one little thing that you're dealing with if you're training any type of martial arts. So, I myself, the most common healthcare provider that I see are my coworkers. Fortunately, I'm lucky. I have good ones. They're right in my office with me, so I can just knock on their door and say, hey, you know, you got 20 minutes. Give me a quick tune-up here. But that's the most common healthcare practitioner that I see. And I do think that it makes a big difference in terms of keeping me out there on the mat and keeping me able to do something that I love doing so much.
Yeah, I love that. And it's not like, I see what you mean. Like, you don't want to be salesy, you know, people need you. Yeah. You got nothing to sell. They need you.
Right.
Find someone else that does this. It's like, they need you.
Exactly.
But it's like, if you also see it, like, you're actually saving money. You're saving your time, you're saving your future. All I have to do is pay $100 a month for a checkup a month, and then my back's good, I sleep good, I can show up to work better, I can train more, my mental health is better because I can train more. It's like, we have to put things like this in our life that just make things better, and one of them is chiropractor practice. Because like, for how much I move and train and work, like, my body's always been kind of sharp because I do stuff like that. I've been going to chiropractor since I was a kid. I had a tune-up with you, and it really helps with that indicator that shows where my body's at. It's like, okay, we're doing good things.
Yes.
Just keep alignment.
Keep doing it. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's really neat now because it's across the board. Even mixed martial arts, which is still, as a sport in the United States, kind of in its infancy. I mean, I think we're at 30 years right now that UFC's been around, and now they have the UFCPI, the UFC Performance Training Institute, which is awesome. It's like the Olympic Training Center for mixed martial artists. So there, they have the cold plunges, they have the heat, they have the sauna, they have an on-site nutritionist. Guess what they also have? A doctor of physical therapy and a doctor of chiropractic, as well as strength and conditioning coaches. So it's really nice to see that finally now MMA as a newer sport and UFC is starting to take these things more serious and realizing like, hey, you know, UFC, they're paying these athletes, you know, some of them, they're paying very well. So they want to do, they want to invest into their athletes to make sure that they can perform their best and not get injured. And that's why they have strength and conditioning. They have, like I said, all the other amenities, including chiropractic and physical therapy right there at the UFC Performance Training Institute, which I think is
a really
cool thing. In Las Vegas. Yeah.
Wow.
It's where, if you watch any of the, I think it's the UFC fight nights where they have like this, it's a smaller cage and it's like a very small, it almost looks like a set of bleachers, like not a big crowd there. That's actually in the UFC Apex, which is part of that UFC Performance Training Institute. So now in there, when a lot of these fighters, you know, if they want to come to Vegas, they can utilize all the facilities. They do tours and whatnot there. It would be really cool to check out, but they can utilize all those facilities and utilize, of course, all the things, and they should, the dietitian, the physical therapy, the chiropractic, all of those things they have available at the UFCPI. So
I love
really
that
cool stuff. Yeah.
I'm sure that gets you so hyped.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's nice again to see that it's going across the board in all sports, because for a long time, the NBA, the NFL, the NHL, you know, all of these high paying professional sports leagues, they all had athletic trainers. They all have physical therapists. Mm-hmm. They all have chiropractors in their locker rooms. They have that all available for the athletes. So it excites me to see that things are changing in the right direction and for the better for mixed martial artists as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I just realized is all of my clients have chiropractors.
There we go.
A couple don't. Like one doesn't. But I realized like that's kind of the thing. Train hard. Check up your body just like you would your teeth. Just check on your spine more and eat healthy.
Absolutely.
Very simple.
Yeah. And if you do those things, you can feel your best and keep training your best, which, you know, sometimes it's almost, nobody likes getting hurt. Getting hurt's no fun, but sometimes it's easier to sell the idea of performing better versus preventing injuries. It's really doing the same. It's preventing injuries and the person's going to perform better. But a lot of the things that, you know, a lot of, especially the pros come into me for is they say, well, I feel like I can train. I always say, like, can you train like 1% harder the next day? Like, more than that, like 10, 20% harder. I'm like, okay, well, then it was well worth a visit. So, yeah, so.
So you actually have a lot of personal experience, and I'm sure that's your why as to why you chose, like, niching with fighters and stuff like that, because you're a fighter, and you've come from this background since you were young. So can you share about, I mean, really just your fighter story, why you fell in love with it, and then turn it into how you brought it to chiropractor?
Yeah,
there
absolutely
had to have been that shift.
Yeah. So it kind of, the story ends with one of those, like sometimes life hands you a lemon and you just have to try to make lemonade out of it. When I was 5 years old, I'm born and raised back in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And when I was 5 years old, I got into the sport of judo. And it was funny because as a little kid, I walked in, I was like, this isn't what I wanted to do. I watched Ninja Turtles and I watched Karate Kid and I want to hi-ya and punch and kick. But I was only five. And the place that I went to, my dad took me to my coach. His name was Mr. Kyuha Kim. He was a Korean man and he became such a huge role model and mentor in my life. You know, rest in peace. He played such a big role in just who I am today. And at age five, my dad said, well, I think, so he taught Taekwondo, which is also like a Korean martial art, in judo. And my dad said, well, I think he kind of wants to do like the kicking and punching, so like Taekwondo. And he said, no. He said, we only do Taekwondo when they're 7 or 8 years old or above. He said, but for five, judo is going to be better for him. So my dad said, okay, put the gi and put your belt on there. You look like you're doing karate, right? Get out on that and doing it. And I really didn't like it as a kid. It was really scary to me. And, you know, going out and getting thrown around and getting your butt kicked sometimes isn't always fun. But yeah. By the time I was 7, 8, when I was old enough to start Taekwondo, I was already pretty good at judo. So I was like, you know, this is fun now. It's a lot more fun going out and throwing other people around and learning than it is getting thrown. So at that time, I decided to stick with judo. And I also became involved in wrestling, because in judo, a lot of tournaments we would go to, it was funny because there would be someone who would come in who was clearly like very, very new at the sport of judo. And they would shoot a double leg and pick the judo guys up and throw them down. And we're like, well, what the heck's that guy doing? That wasn't judo. And everyone said, well, oh, well, that's wrestling. If you do judo and wrestling, you're going to be really tough to beat. And I was very fortunate. The state of Pennsylvania is arguably the strongest state for children and high school wrestlers to compete in. And I lived in southwestern Pennsylvania, which is a huge hotbed for wrestling. So I was lucky because although judo is not a big sport in the United States, and especially not in Pennsylvania, wrestling is huge out there. So from the time I was about 7, I would do wrestling during wrestling season, which is all winter long. And then I would do judo all summer long. And I was getting better and better at all of those. I competed nationally. I started competing internationally when I was in college. And in college, I switched off from wrestling and I decided I just wanted to focus all of my energy into judo. And my goal at the time, and I thought it was a realistic one, was to try to get on some European tours to go like qualify by competing in certain national level events, placing in them, accumulating points, and qualifying to go compete in Europe, in Asia, and then potentially make my way to, the goal was of course the world or the Olympic teams.
Dang.
Yeah, so I started getting after it and I started getting really, really serious about judo in college to the extent where I even took one semester and I studied abroad in Osaka, Japan. And I went over there specifically. I was taking Japanese classes, reading, writing, culture, history, all that. But I primarily went there so that I could use the studying abroad as a mode to get me to where I could train and do judo in Japan. Because judo in Japan is like football in the United States. It's a big sport. A lot of their top level athletes, like that's the sport that they compete in.
Yeah.
So to be able to go to Japan and practice and train and compete in judo 6 days a week with 25 other black belts my age and my size was a huge opportunity.
Wow.
And one of the most like growing, maturing times in my life. I was only 19 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I remember my plane landed in Japan. And the whole time I was like, I'm just here for judo. I don't care about anything else. I'm just here for judo.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting on the bus driving to the university and like looking at all the signs. At the time I had taken like one semester of Japanese and I was like, what am I doing? I can't read any of those signs. I was like, what have I gotten myself into? This is going to be a nightmare. And I spent, I think in total 7 months over there in Osaka.
Wow.
Training. It was such a great opportunity as a 19-year-old. I made good friends. My judo teammates, like half of them ended up flying back over to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania at some point to visit me and spend time living with my family. I got to compete in like the collegiate national team qualifiers for judo, which was just a surreal experience looking back on it. It's just university versus university, like a dual meet like we would do in wrestling in the United States. And there's no weight classes. So it's just give us your 7 best players. That's it. So our 7 best line up against their 7 best and we compete and whoever wins the majority of the matches moves on to the next round.
Wow.
So I dove in head first, really trying to make it with judo. And then it was, man, Hannah, I think it was 8 weeks after I came back from Japan, I tore my ACL for the first time.
Oh,
so I was super bummed. I was like, oh, I came back. I'm in good shape. I feel like the best I have in my life. I had just turned 20 at the time. Tore my ACL. Okay, no big deal. You know, my coach was like, hey, this happens. Every great athlete gets injured, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rehabbed the ACL. Started getting a lot of back pain because when you tear your ACL, they put you in this big, like, immobilizing brace, and it covers basically from your upper thigh all the way down your calf. So just when I would walk step, I was obviously, you know, walking with a limp for a while after the surgery, so my back started hurting a lot. So I was going to my physical therapist, who I really liked a lot, and they were helping me with the knee a lot. And it just got to the point where, again, I had just had this ACL surgery. I had all these screws in my knees, and I had to tell my physical therapist, I said, hey, you know, what we're doing on my knee is great, but my back is killing me. My back hurts more than my knee is now. And I'm like, this is my quarter-life crisis. What am I going to do?
You're
20. Yeah, I'm 20. I just spent all this time going to Japan to train. My knee hurts. Now my back hurts too. And it just seemed like such a disaster. And the physical therapist gave me some good exercises and things that I could do to help with my back, which were helpful, but I really felt like I wanted someone to, you know, get in there and focus on my back a little bit more. And my mother, who is a nurse, she recommended that I see a chiropractor. Mm. And being young and, again, ignorant, and this is why some people just don't know, I kind of like scoffed at her. I was like, a chiropractor? I'm like, what are they gonna do? They're gonna crack my neck and my back's just gonna be better. And my mom said, no, well, you like your physical therapist a lot. And, you know, I at the time even said, oh, maybe I could see myself being a physical therapist.
Yeah.
She said the chiropractor that the nurses, because she was a nurse, the nurses at my hospital use, he's a lot like a physical therapist. He's going to show you exercises and stretches. You can do some deep tissue massage work, and he might adjust you. Well, I went to the chiropractor, and he did all of that, and I found it to be tremendously beneficial, and I kind of got excited, and I was like, wow, well, this is – what's so different from you and a physical therapist? And that was when that chiropractor back in Pittsburgh said, well, we should sit down and talk, because he said, if you're thinking about being a physical therapist, I think you would be a great chiropractor.
Your chiropractor told you this.
Yeah. So so now, you know, through my own poor experience and my own injuries, it was I turned into something really good. And it's something that I recommend people, mm-hmm. whether it's personal training or chiropractic or physical therapy, or I mean, you could probably expand this to any career path. Whatever it is that you think you might want to do, make sure you go spend some quality time with someone who's doing that so you can see the good and the bad. And again, for me, in my own bad experience, I was there as a patient because yeah. I was injured. And at the time, I was like, this is the last place in the world I want to be. I don't want to be at this physical therapist. And my knee's busted. And now I'm a darn chiropractor. And my back's busted. And it seemed like it was all just, you know, a nightmare, like the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
But it gave me ample time to shadow both and see what it's like as from a patient's perspective. And yeah, that catapulted me to deciding to go to chiropractic school and moving to California and San Jose, and here we are today.
That's so wild.
Yeah,
that's like a really good story.
Yeah,
well, I mean, I'm sure when you were 20 you hated life.
Oh, totally. Like I said, I refer to it as my quarter life crisis. I was like, this is worst case scenario. But you know, had I not torn my ACL, I don't know what I'd be doing today. I have no idea what I'd be doing today.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's funny because I've talked to a lot of fighters whom you actually have adjusted, mm-hmm. and just as they are at the end of their career and are probably done, they kind of have like a craving for like the other paths that they're not craving, but curiosity about other paths they could have taken. Or maybe like you said, if you want to do something, get around people that do it to know the yes. good and the bad. So sure. like your dream with fighting, maybe God knew that you wouldn't have liked what it really was going to be.
Right.
Some people need to fight until the moment they can't.
Right.
Some need to fight until they realize that actually I don't want it. And then some get injured for the redirection of their life. But yeah, it's a very interesting path, because if you were to go be a fighter, your goal would be to get on a team where, like, I don't know how you get paid. I don't know how you get paid as a fighter.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll just straight up say it. How do you make a life
for sure
and a living as a fighter?
Man, it's hard. And that's why working with, especially in mixed martial arts in particular, that's my passion project. I want to help those men and those women go as far as they can possibly go and be as successful as they can, because at the time, since it's still a growing sport, and I think that we're going to see this change over the next 10 years. I think it's going to change a lot. But right now, when you are up and coming, you have to train so hard.
Yeah.
A lot of these athletes are trying to juggle like a side job. You know, you work with some of them. Some of them are doing personal training.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are, you know, driving. Some of them are working at restaurants, you know, coaching, whatever it is that they can do to try to make extra money. And other professional athletes don't have that. They have to do that, right?
Yeah.
They have the luxury of they're just making some money, even if it's not a lot of money. They're making some money. They can depend on, okay, I'm going to make this amount of money right away, and they can run with it. So right now, in order to be like a professional fighter, so my career path didn't necessarily – I hadn't ruled out MMA, but that wasn't my goal. For me, my goal was to go to the Olympics for judo. That's what I really wanted to do, mm-hmm. is represent the United States of America in the sport of judo. And even that, it's a very similar path. There's no money in judo. You know, you don't see the guy drive around, hey, oh, that guy has a nice Porsche. He must do judo, right?
Uh-huh.
Nobody says that. but, you know, you see someone driving a really nice car around, you're like, oh, maybe that's like, you know, that might be an NBA player or an mm-hmm. NFL player, because there's lots of money in those sports. I'm happy to see that now mixed martial arts is starting to grow financially and there's more opportunity for mm-hmm. those athletes. But unfortunately for them, you got to pay to play. And, you know, you have to pinch your pennies and you have to work really, really hard to try to transition from whatever your expertise is. And now I know some people just get into MMA right away, which sure, you mm-hmm. can do that. I think you have to be a very gifted athlete to say, I just want to get into MMA and then find success with it. Most of the highest caliber people that we have seen in MMA over the years are people that grew up with like a lifelong background in something, whether it's wrestling's a big one, judo, sambo, kickboxing, Muay Thai, karate, whatever it might be. Generally, the top people in UFC have had some strong background in those, and they kind of went as far as they could in that sport before they transitioned into MMA. And again, most of those sports don't pay a lot of money. Now, if you want to be a professional fighter, there's different ways you can go about it. There are amateur leagues. I think the main one here in California is called CAMO. It's like the California Amateur Mixed Martial Arts Organization or Association, something like that. So you have to build up your record a little bit in that. And to my knowledge, amateurs not paying. So, you know, you see people fighting and they might be out there and they're doing MMA, but they're not getting paid for it. So they have to either have someone, you know, a family or a spouse or a friend supporting them, or they're just really busting their butt on the side trying to make ends meet while they're still training like a professional athlete. Once you break through to that and once you start fighting professionally, so I think you went to the one in Napa. Did you go to SF Combat?
Yes.
Yeah, so lots of people that we both know go up and fight in there. Uh-huh. And, you know, they negotiate different contracts, but it's really difficult because it's a sum of money. So you're going to get, okay, Hannah, you'll fight. And you're like, well, I want to make this much money. Well, we only can pay you this much money. And we're going to negotiate to something where you're like, okay, I'll fight for that. You know, it's positive. But for a lot of these fighters, they're not – the money that they make in those fights isn't necessarily going to get them that far. What that fight is going to do is going to get a win on their record and mm-hmm. another win and another professional win. So a lot of them are trying to build up their professional record so that – they can take that professional record through their coach or through their manager and go to a professional organization like Bellator, PFL, ONE FC, UFC, and they can present their case to those people to try to actually get substantial pay and try to get more long-term pay. So it's really tough to be a professional fighter, especially in mixed martial arts. You know, and that's kind of why I, over the years, I've said that it's my passion project to really help these guys because mm-hmm. you know, don't get me wrong, I like making money, but if I'm working with someone who I know needs the help to try to get to a position where they could potentially start earning a little bit of money, I bend a lot and I work with these guys simply mm-hmm. because it's something that I love. And I know that not a lot of other people will do that for them, right? Mm, you know, there's not a lot of people who are going to advertise like, hey, send all your aspiring professional fighters to me and, you know, I'll work on them for a discounted rate and they're going to come in with 500 different injuries every week. But for me, I know that they need it. And I know mm-hmm. that what I can do can make a difference for them. And, you know, I I've had some of my professional athletes who have made it. And I have a lot right now who are like right on the verge. I've got mm-hmm. a healthy handful of men and women out there that are like, they're this close to getting there where they're getting paid the way that they should be getting paid to be a professional fighter. And I know, and they're the most gracious, like they're most appreciative group of people I've ever worked with. And I know that they appreciate me helping them, even if it was 1% to get there. So that's my passion project, is helping the fighters.
I love that, because that's honestly, I think it's also my passion project to help fighters, because like you've experienced, like I've experienced, fighting is just so good to you. Like the journey, you can learn judo, you can learn karate, you can learn wrestling, jiu-jitsu, and it all connects. And the community, it's tough love, but it's sure is love.
Oh yeah.
Like find your community, find your people, and it's just the greatest experience, and it saves people from a lot of hard things.
Absolutely.
So when I meet young athletes, they're like, I'm giving my whole everything to fighting. I'm like, okay, you should, because that's better than the other route. Absolutely. But my thing is, I like thinking about money, talking about money. How could someone like you, or an ideal young fighter that wants to make it big, mm-hmm. be realistic about the fact that you got to eat, you got to pay for stuff, and if you want to be in a relationship one day, you're going to pay for that too. So it's like, before the professional fighting pay, there's also the concept of sponsors,
of course,
which no one's really tapped into, in the sense where, like, if I don't know about it, I just don't think it's promoted well,
right?
But how, like, businesses, they need athletes to promote their athletes to promote their product, or for the athletes to get product, or ideally money, if they're promoting is well enough for the business.
Yeah.
Things like that. Those are like interesting industries, but that's also another way for fighters to be able to do what they do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's again, something that I don't know a ton about. My wife and I, we have, and our office has sponsored a couple of these fighters, and you know, it's sometimes not a lot, but I know it's enough to help, you know, make training a little bit more comfortable for them, to where they're like, okay, I could either work this amount of hours, or I could train this amount of hours. And, you know, for the athlete to get just a little bit of sponsorship and a little bit of cross promotion, where, and for myself, for my business, the athletes that we've sponsored, it's been well worth it, because again, they promote us, you know, with social media, it's so powerful now. Yeah. You know, I mean, just how many people, I mean, even just on this podcast alone for you and I, how many people that we're going to connect with because of it. So those fighters, a lot of times by me sponsoring them, are more than happy to co-promote me. And that gets my name out there, and that gets what I do out there. And then also, again, you know, one of our most recent sponsors was a female fighter who, she was fighting her first ever pro MMA fight. And, you know, her and her husband are good friends of my wife and I.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, and we wanted to sponsor her just to, you know, even a little bit, just to, because we liked her. And, you know, and we believe that, you know, her investing more time into fighting to try to be the best person she could be, because I think she is going to kick some butt. And I think she's going to go really far with it. So, so I think, you know, if it's something that a lot of the fighters don't know about, and like you said, you talk to people and they're like, I want to give it my all, I want to go to MMA. You know, they have to understand that it's, you know, it, the lights and the glory and, you know, the knockouts are awesome. That's all fun. But like you said, you know, okay, well, when you get home, who paid your rent? Who's paying for your food? Who's making you dinner? You know, are you making your own dinner? Have you talked to a, you know, food prep company that might be interested in sponsoring you? So I think those opportunities are out there. And I think, you know, sometimes the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right? Like, you have to go out and you have to like ask for help. And, you know, it's like anything else. You just have to find the right people sometimes too, because people are willing to help. And I'm sure there are sponsorships out there. They're like, okay, cool. Like, you know, I have this landscaping company and Hannah wants to be a professional fighter. Well, yeah, like, how could we make this work? And, you know, you could say, well, you could sit down with me and do something like this, and I'm going to talk about what you do a little bit. So there is opportunity for cross promotion where I think fighters, you know, should be thinking about while they're trying to get to that point in their career where they are getting compensated fairly for the level of athleticism and the performances that they're putting on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love how you're tapped into that, because it's very interesting.
Yeah,
it's super cool. It's the one of the coolest hobbies and passions to even just be aware of, like, the things that fighters go through.
Right.
And I'm sure you love it, because it's part you. Yeah. It's who you are.
Yeah, absolutely.
A part that we didn't talk about that I don't even know where it fits in. How'd you do everything with NASM? When did you do that?
Great question. So before I got into chiropractic school, for my undergraduate degree, I got my Bachelor's of Science in Health and Physical Education. So again, this is kind of one of those, again, my life made that injury was such a pivotal, me tearing my ACL was such a pivotal moment in my career. Because I don't even know if I would have, Hannah, I don't know if I would have come out to California if I didn't have that injury. I very likely might still be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for all I know. So I was majoring in health and physical education at the time. And my game plan was, okay, I am going to, again, I was judo. I'm going to finish college. I'm going to work as a teacher, which would give me enough free time. So I would have summers available that I could train and I could travel and I could compete. So for me, I was like, oh, this could be great. I'll be a health and PE teacher. So I'm still teaching something and doing something that I'm very passionate about. I was thinking I could coach wrestling in the winter seasons back in Pennsylvania to make a little bit of money, but also to help those young athletes and help them chase their dreams. And then I would have evening times in the off season to try to train. And in summer times where I would have the opportunity to, you know, if needed, travel to Europe, South America, Asia to compete in these big pointed competitions. And I ended up, so I studied all that. So I was very interested in, again, just health, fitness in general. And when I tore the ACL, that pivoted and sent me down the chiropractic school route. When I finished chiropractic school, again, kind of going back to almost that changing your life as a professional athlete, as a professional business person as well, you have to ask, like, who's going to pay the bills? Like, oh man, I want to start my own business. I want to be an entrepreneur. That's awesome. And it is awesome. And I encourage that. But who's going to pay your bills? Because when you start your business, you're not going to have any money. That's just, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
In fact, you're probably going to be negative money depending on what your business is. And that's okay because that's part of it, but you have to think about those things. So I got re-involved with NASM when I had finished chiropractic school because I wanted to go the entrepreneur route. I wanted to do the self-employed route. I wanted to chase my passion project. But of course, nobody knew who I was at the time. Nobody. No one was calling me to talk on podcasts. There weren't professional athletes. There weren't guys from the 49ers calling me to come work on them. Like, nobody knew who I was. You have to build your name, right? So I said, okay, what's something that maybe I could do to supplement my income in the meantime? And like, what's something that I also consider myself like highly skilled at? So at the time, I had my NASM personal training certification, and I saw online that they were looking to hire workshop instructors. I was like, oh, well, you know, let me read more into that. And one of their specific certifications is the CES, the corrective exercise specialist. Mm-hmm. And me being a doctor of chiropractic at the time and already being an NASM certified personal trainer, I was like, oh, well, that would be cool. I could probably feel pretty comfortable standing in front of a group of personal trainers or aspiring personal trainers to talk about biomechanics through this corrective exercise specialist program. So I applied, and it was a really awesome opportunity. They flew me down. They're based out of, they've moved a couple times, but let's say Chandler, Arizona is where they're generally at. So they flew myself and I think there are like 20 of us from across the country of all different disciplines. There were a couple physical therapists, a couple chiropractors, a couple people who were on like reality TV show personal trainers. And they flew us all in. They said, okay, we're going to teach you guys everything that you need to know about the NASM CPT, the Certified Personal Training Model. And then we'll kind of start to cluster you towards like, oh, this person, they tend to work more with performance athletes. So we're going to funnel them to be a teacher for the PES, the performance enhancement specialist. And then I was funneled more into the CES, the corrective exercise specialist program. Mm. And that was really cool because not only did I get to build my knowledge base and feel more comfortable using the NASM model, but also they did a lot of, especially at the training time, and then it was kind of trial by fire. I got to work on a lot of public speaking, which was something that I wasn't always very comfortable with. But teaching with them and then having the opportunity to, for the next 10 years, I worked with, I don't currently work with them anymore. My practice has just taken off and I just don't have time for it. But mm-hmm. I really like them. I like all the people that I worked with. I had mentors through NASM, so I think very highly of them as an organization. But for 10 years, I had the opportunity, and it would be, you know, once a year, we would just get a tentative schedule of, you know, anywhere from 8 to 15, usually different gyms that we would go to. And they'd say, hey, there's going to be 20 people at this gym. There's going to be 60 people at this gym. There's going to be 10 people at this gym all over the country, and speak and just teach this corrective exercise strategies class to help them not only prepare to take the exam, but also prepare to be a successful personal trainer using that CES model. So for me, it was kind of my side hustle, but it was really cool because again, you know, I took advantage of this is my side hustle, but I'm going to be able to learn a lot. I'm going to be able to, they gave me some great opportunities. They presented and said, hey, there's these conferences. There's one in Chicago. Is there anyone interested in presenting and tell us what topics you want to present on? There was one that I was like, oh, this is, I was like, I have to jump on it. I was like, why would I not take this opportunity? They said, hey, there's this sports science symposium in Beijing, China. Does anybody want to go? And I was like, yes, like, I want to go. I'm like, when else am I going to go to Beijing, right?
Wow.
I mean, it's not on my bucket list of like places I like want to go on vacation, but I'm like, how cool would it be to go and teach a workshop at a conference in Beijing? So I sent out my proposal and sure enough, you know, they flew me out and I got to speak. It was so cool, and it was strangely one of the least nervous public speaking events I've ever presented at.
Wow.
So I was getting ready to speak, and it was in this big like auditorium.
And was everyone Chinese or was it?
Everyone was Chinese. Like the only people who were not Chinese were a handful of the speakers. Like there was a British woman who was there presenting, like, and we weren't presenting together. At the end it was cool because they had all the international people on a panel. Where they would have a translator. So each of us was assigned a translator too.
That's cool. It was cool.
And the best part of it was that having the translator was what made it so not nerve-wracking. Because I started talking and I would say something and I would pause and I would look at him and he would say something and I was like, who who knows what this guy is saying? I'm like, I don't even know how good his English is.
Yeah.
I'm using very specific, like, scientific and, like, anatomical terms. I'm like, I'm not nervous at all anymore, because I was speaking to a group of, like, 200, again, like, all Chinese, and I'm like, they're kind of nodding, and I'm like, I think they're getting what I'm saying. But at the end of the day, he's the one giving the speech.
That's interesting.
Not me. Yeah. I'm just telling him what to say, and I think he's telling them what I'm saying, but, you know, who knows? Maybe he's telling his own story along the way. Maybe he's telling it the way he wanted it to be told.
True. That's very true. And so, you have, like, that, like, little second to think about your thoughts a little bit more. So it's, like, probably the most perfect situation for you.
Yeah. It was fantastic. I was like, oh, this is great, because, you know, this is kind of on him. If people don't like this talk, I was like, hey, he's the one that presented it. I just told him what to say. So, so I really liked my time with NASM. And again, you know, that was good, because that helped me keep connected with my chiropractic clinic, and then also, like, my fitness background, doing the bachelor's degree in health and physical education. And, you know, again, I think, who knows, the day might come where I might start getting back into a little bit of personal training as well, and make that an option for what I do. But for the time, I have my hands full with chiropractic work, so we'll stick with that.
And you're married.
Yes, absolutely.
When did you meet your wife?
I met my wife in fall of 2016.
In California.
No, in Arizona.
What?
Uh-huh, yeah. So that's why I hesitated when I answered that right away, because we have this whole very, like, interesting social media interaction before we ever, like, actually met in person. So when we tell this story to our parents, we're like, we met at a bar. We're like, let's just keep it simple.
That's
we met
simple,
at a bar.
Yeah.
If we say, like, well, we met on this app, and then we followed each other on this app, and then we didn't message each other until 6 months later on this app, after she liked a couple of my photos and I liked a couple of her photos.
Cute.
Then we finally met up.
In Arizona?
In Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah. And I was out there for, again, it's life has its funny ways. I would not have met my wife if it weren't for NASM, because I was out there for a continuing education program through NASM. So she was working as a nurse at the time in Phoenix, Arizona. I was doing my chiropractic work here in San Jose. And I flew down there. I just happened to be in town. We chatted a little bit on social media, decided to meet up. And at the time, I was there with two of my coworkers, Brian Nguyen and Josh Gonzalez. They're my wingmans to come meet up with my now wife.
Aww.
And we were all there for NASM. And it was kind of funny, because we went forward and we ended up getting married, and they're like, wait a minute, was that the girl that we went to meet at the bar with you? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, oh, that's so crazy. And they're like, we kind of introduced you to your wife then. I was like, yeah, you guys, absolutely. You get the high five. So
sure,
Brian, Josh, thanks, guys.
How long were you guys dating for?
We dated, this is also an interesting story. And I would say probably because of our age at the time, it made it a little bit different.
Just put it down.
We dated for 4 or 5 months.
Yay, that's good. That's okay.
Before she packed up and moved in with me.
Wow.
Here in San Jose, California. Now, again, I turn 40 in August, and I think so that was 7 years ago. So I was old enough at the time, and I think my wife was also old enough at the time, because our friends and family were a little bit like, you guys are gonna move in together? Like, you've only been dating for 4 or 5 months. And granted, it was long distance, but of course, when we would meet up, we would, you know, spend all day together, because we're like, well, I came to Arizona to see you. I'm going to spend all day with you, and vice versa. So we both felt pretty confident that when we said, like, look, okay, well, where is this going? You know, you're in Arizona. I'm in California. She's working as a nurse. I'm working as a chiropractor with my own business. Her job, her career were a little bit more mobile at the time than mine were. So I was like, you know, if we're going to be serious about this, like, I would probably want you to move up with me. So we just kind of confidently dove into the deep end, and, you know, here we are. That was in 2020. So here we are No, that was not 2020. What am I talking about? That was in 2017. So we met. Yeah, we got married in 2020. We met in 2016. She moved in at the beginning of 2017, and we were married in 2020, and here we are.
So you both were very certain that you were ready to get married. What made you feel like you were ready to take something that seriously?
You know, it sounds kind of silly, but I don't necessarily believe that it was a, like, oh, like, I have met the one and now is the time. I felt like she was the perfect person for me, lifestyle and like hobbies and things that we like to do. But I also felt that I need to give a lot of weight to just who I was at that time and where I was in my life. Before that, if I would have met her, I don't know that we would be married today. I like to think, you know, the fairy tale story, like if I met her when I was 23, we'd be married. I don't know if that would have happened though, because at the time, I wasn't necessarily interested in getting married. I wasn't interested in finding a partner. I wasn't interested in, you know, starting a family. I was interested in finishing my chiropractic school, opening my own business, and trying to chase my dream. So for me, my career was really a lot more important than finding a person for a long time. And once my career got to a point that I was pretty comfortable and I felt good about where I was at, I felt like I was more, okay, well, you know, the next step is looking for more stability in my life. And that's a big word when I talk about my relationship with my wife, is that it brought so much stability to my life. I felt like before that, it was so much almost wandering and a lot of like wasted time, you know, spending time out with friends or like going out and like drinking and doing happy hour every other night. And it was just, it wasn't going anywhere. I felt like I was just like on this like mouse wheel, just running around in circles, and I wasn't really going in the direction that I wanted to. And when I met my wife, even before she moved in, I felt like my life was like, okay, now I'm walking forward. Now I'm moving in the right direction because I have checked this off of my list and I have found this right person in my life that not only do I appreciate, but she makes me so much better of a person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like to think that I help her be a better person as well. So meeting my wife was a big important part in my career in terms of like, okay, now I can really skyrocket and now the sky's the limit for what I want to pursue. And she's been so great and so supportive. You know, with COVID, man, it was such a kick in the pants for so many people with so many careers.
Right.
And, you know, having my own business, I remember when that all started, I told her, I was like, that's it. And, you know, this was only a couple years ago. I was like, that's it. I'm just going to throw in the towel. I'm going to call it quits. Like this is going to work. How am I going to run my own business? People were afraid to even sit 6 feet away from each other at the time. I was like, this isn't going to work. I should get one of those like hospital or corporate jobs. And I think they're great. And who knows, maybe I will be a corporate chiropractor or a VA hospital chiropractor one day. But at the time I was like, I'm so close to my dream. I'm working with all these professional athletes. Like I'm finally at the place where, you know, when I go to the UFC gym, like the coaches, a lot of them know who I am. Yeah. A lot of the members know who I am independently of seeing me at the gym. But I was ready to throw in the towel for all of it. And she was like, I think you're gonna be so mad at yourself if you do that. She's like, I don't think you should. And of course, at the time, she was probably like, just get a regular job and get safe money and get safe pay. But she knew that that wasn't what was going to fulfill me as an individual. So she was and still has been very supportive of me just doing it this way and, you know, really pushing to be the best person in my career, which obviously is going to feed me to be the best person that I can be. I think finding a good person who, you know, really makes you better and someone who's really going to help you, you know, smooth out your life and just kind of make things a little bit more like, okay, we're on the same page, we're both going to grow and, you know, just support you and push you to be the best that you can be. And I think, you know, if I ever got to the point where I was like, hey, you know, I think I'm over this. I think I'm going to throw in the towel. And I think that if she thought that I genuinely felt that way, she would also be supportive of that. But I think at the time she knew that I wanted to throw in the towel because it was the easier thing to do. It would have been easy for me to quit my career as this private practice and just try to get a job where, okay, every month here's my paycheck and I'm good. It's safe. It's stable, right? And I think she saw that I was chasing that safety and that stability, but I didn't want to chase it. I still wanted to chase my passion and chase my private practice and my passion project of working with these athletes and weekend warriors. And she was super supportive of that, which I'm eternally and will forever be grateful for, because, you know, if I had, you know, been with the wrong partner, they very likely could have been like, well, it'd be better for me if they just made regular money and I knew how much money they were going to make.
Yeah.
And they would push you down the wrong path, which I know for sure I would have regretted doing, especially knowing where I'm at today. So
yeah, that's what makes me really happy about like your path and the way things went for you, because like even just being successful, it's pretty cool to like, if you weren't married, it'd be cool that you made it to this place in your life where you're just the most phenomenal chiropractor in the Bay Area, where Like, if you're an athlete, you know about you.
Right.
But the fact you have a wife, it's like, dang, you got it all. Like, you know, you face struggles, but I do believe that a lot of things come back to the prize of family. And, like, at the end of the day, if you have those people that are behind the scenes when the company isn't doing well, when your business isn't marketed everywhere, it's like, who's there for you then? Those are the moments that matter. And the fact that you have that, it's like, yes, like, keep going for families.
Yeah.
Even just the most successful people, once you get that dream, the dream's really still going to be family.
Absolutely. Yeah. And at the end of the day, that's going to be the most important thing, because without that, like you said, you know, your good days aren't going to feel as good, you know, when you have a good day. And, you know, even when I come home and I tell my wife, and sometimes she's like, okay, like, you talk about these athletes all the time. Like, man, I work on such and such, and they have a fight, and they're the main event in UFC on such and such date. And guess what they said? They said this. And she's like, oh, okay, yeah, like, that's really cool. Like, okay, let's eat dinner now. But it's so nice to have someone there to high five with and to be like, you know, we're here and we're doing this together. And of course, every time I'm like, well, thank you for pushing me, because I may have, if I had the wrong partner, I may have quit on myself a long time ago.
Right.
You know, so for the best times and for the worst times, picking the right partner. And again, someone who's just good energy, who, you know, is going to be an unbiased person that's going to help you just be the best person that you can be is so important in your life. And it's such a huge advantage to have somebody like I have. So
yeah, I really like that. And even acknowledging that before it's wandering, it's like weekends drinking, weekends just go somewhere, wait for your next vacation to be crazy in a different country.
Yep.
You know, it's cool, it's fun. Like, everyone should do a couple of those just to realize that alcohol in your system, it's fun.
That's it. And it's short-lived. And guess what? Monday comes around, you're back at work, and it's gone. And so is your money, and you probably have a headache, and there's all the problems that go along with it. But again, I think it's important to have fun, and I think everybody has a different amount of fun that they should have in their life. You know, like, I carried mine on a little bit later in life, and I think a big part of that was me building my career. So I wasn't, you know, my career was primary, and, you know, finding the right person was very secondary to me. So I carried that on into my 30s, and then I got to a point where I was like, I am over it, I'm done. Like, I like what I do for work. I want to spend more time focusing on my work and less time out partying and drinking and just, you know, staying up all night and wasting my time. So then, fortunately, at that time, I was ready, and I met my wife, because, again, who knows, if I had met her 10 years earlier, we might have, you know, hung out once or twice and then been like, you know, I don't have time for you, I'm too busy doing this, and vice versa, she might have been too busy doing that, and it might not have worked. So I think, you know, in the right time, if you're a good person and you're doing good things and you're trying your best to do things the right way and the moral way, that your life's going to turn out for you, and, you know, good things are going to happen at the right times. And, you know, when you look back at it in hindsight, you'll be like, oh, well, that happened because of this. I tore my ACL and that made me a chiropractor. And then I started working with NASM because I had my bachelor's degree in health and physical education. And then I met my wife in 2016 because that was when, you know, my career was starting to kind of turn around and things were good and things were getting stable. So, you know, you have these different milestones in life that they don't always make sense on the path, but in hindsight, you're like, oh, I understand why that happened at that time.
Wow. You know, that's insane that your business started doing well right before COVID. And you have to touch people.
Yeah. Yep.
Man, I can't imagine how you did that. And I'm sure I could. You're like, okay, how do I put this? I have to touch you.
Yeah.
Social distancing can't be a thing.
Yeah.
That's the basis of the business. How on earth did you go through that? That's wild.
And, you know, I think, again, you know, looking back, I'm pretty lucky that I have a big patient base of people who, I mean, how much do you touch someone in jiu-jitsu, right? You're literally like all over. So I had a patient base of a lot of people who everyone was a little bit scared during COVID, right? We just didn't know what the heck was going on. But people's, you know, comfort with like how close they are to somebody oftentimes depend on how close they are to people in their day-to-day life. So there's a lot of people who, you know, this is as close. I mean, hey, they might even scoot their chair back a little bit. Like, they don't spend time during their day this close to anybody except for their spouse.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, working with a community of martial artists who are at bare minimum, you know, striking and arm's length away from each other, and grapplers, I mean, come on, we're just like all over each other. Right. So I was fortunate that I had a lot of people that, you know, I had a mask on, I had gloves on. Like, it was all kind of seeming ridiculous because I'm going to do this and then I'm going to like work on your back and work on your neck. But that was the rules. And that was the rules that I had to abide by mm-hmm. to keep my business open. So I was fortunate that during that time, I did have a solid hunk of people who are in general more comfortable with being close with people than a lot of other people are. Because a lot of other people, you know, especially, geez, the people who work from home, they were the most afraid because they don't see anybody outside of their house yeah. on a regular day.
Yeah.
You know, you and I, we're going to go to the gym. We're going to go to jiu-jitsu. You're doing your podcast. We're talking here. You know, being close to someone isn't really as foreign to them. But for some people, that was foreign to begin with. Mm-hmm. And now, well, wait a minute. I have to stay 6 feet away from people. So those people, you know, we sent out an email and we said, hey, you know where to find us. We're here. We are so lucky that we're in healthcare because we were considered an essential business. So we were able to keep our doors open. So we had a few months where I was like, this isn't gonna work. I'm gonna call my dad back in Pennsylvania and move into his basement at some point because like this is gonna go under. And I'm like, well, at least it's cheaper to live back in Pennsylvania than it is out here. But fortunately we were able to keep our doors open. We had people who, you know, slowly but surely started coming around, and you know, we had people who in general are a little bit more okay with being close to somebody, and they're not as mm-hmm. worried about, you know, worst case scenario of if I get sick or anything like that. So we survived it, but it was a scary one. Yeah.
And where you are is one of the most expensive places to live, the mm-hmm. hardest place to start a business. Hard as in financially, but at the same time, there's nowhere else other than Silicon Valley that is like more about ingenuity and business.
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the fact that it's hard. And if you go to Pennsylvania, you can probably find a great home for half your rent, whatever it is, which it's different though, because in Pennsylvania, you won't get the dream.
No, exactly. Exactly. And that's still something that we juggle around because my wife is originally from Albany, New York. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So we're both from the Northeast. When we go home for the holidays, we drive to both my parents and her parents back and forth. So we get a lot of pool, like my brother's sister, aunts, uncles, cousins, her niece, nephew, sisters are all back that way. So we get a lot of pool to go back. And like you said, people are like, well, it would be easy, you know, especially if we were to settle in Pittsburgh. Like you could literally buy a house and buy a commercial building and have a bigger office in a bigger house than you have for what you're paying for your rent at those two out here by far. And own it outright. It's mine. And they're like, you have a big, huge family out here that could help promote your business. And they're right. And it would be easier. But, you know, the right road isn't always the easy road. Sometimes the harder road is the right road. And I feel like the further I push on this hard road, because there's always times you're like, oh, I should just quit and go do the easy thing. But the further that I push down that harder road, the better it seems to get, and the bigger opportunities, and the more exciting the career seems to get. So it's, you know, definitely one of those, if you're close or if you're chasing something that you're really passionate about, don't quit on it, because you will regret it. You will look back and be like, man, I was closer than I thought I was, and why did I stop doing that? Now I'm punching the time clock, 9 to 5, doing something that I don't do just for money. Mm-hmm. I get it. Money's important, but, you know, time is something that we can't buy. So you want to spend your time doing something you love.
Mm-hmm. And I love hearing that, because I'm sure no one sees you as a startup business owner.
Right.
You're just the professional athlete chiropractor.
Exactly.
But not too long ago.
Yep.
Man, you could have upped and left to Pennsylvania.
Oh, absolutely.
But you're really from Pennsylvania because of how you say tournament.
Oh, yeah. Tournament.
Yeah. I was in Pennsylvania. Yeah, because actually I lived in Pennsylvania for like about a month with some family friends before COVID, because I was like, I don't know what this is. I'm just going to stay here.
Yeah.
And someone said tournament. I was like, you say that wrong.
Yep.
Like, no, you say it Pennsylvania.
Yep, that's how it goes. There's a lot of, especially from Pittsburgh, there's a lot of little words that I've tried to avoid saying because you sound like you're definitely not from here when you say it that way. But like a lot of like the OWs and the OUs in Pittsburgh in particular are pronounced AH. So if you say downtown south side, like for me, like I have to really like say it downtown south side. In Pittsburgh, we would say downtown south side. So downtown, like a lot of AH.
Downtown south side.
So yeah. So it's been a fun journey. A lot has changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really happy that you chose Silicon Valley. Like, you're doing so well. And I do believe that there's just something good happening in the area right now. Yeah. I mean, having the gym with bringing in a bunch of different athletes and the fact that it just seems like a very hopeful time and a hopeful environment to pursue whatever you want to pursue if you're willing to have the risk. But there's just this Bay Area environment really gets you kind of ambitious and you just have options. Can't have like maybe the super slow, chill farm life, but you got options to succeed for sure.
Absolutely. And there's plenty of examples of it. You know, you want to be around people who are like, well, they made it and they made it. And, you know, the sky's the limit with what you want to do out here. And there are so many examples of people in the Bay Area who have done that. It's just a matter of, okay, you got to find something. I mean, so many books and so many podcasts that I listen to are like, if you have something that you really love and you genuinely in your heart, like believe that you're good at it, like the money's going to come eventually. It's going to come. You just have to keep pushing in that harder direction. So the opportunity is out here and, you know, we can grow as big and do as much as we want to. So,
Well, we definitely hit our time a little bit past. I would love you to look at the camera and explain to them how they can keep their body healthy with the basis of what you know, because I know you know there's a couple simple things that can apply to the majority from fighter to sitter. So
absolutely. Okay. Well, a couple of just quick things that I would like to throw out there, like Hannah had asked about, things that we can do to just stay healthy and to make our bodies feel fit, is you want to move, and you want to move as much as you can. And, you know, I know that some people might be listening to this and say, wow, they talked a lot about like professional athletes and weekend warriors, and I'm none of those. I never played sports and I don't have a gym membership. Well, if you live in this area, you know, the weather's nice. Go out and go for a walk. There is a mountain of literature and research out there right now that shows that if you do something low intensity for 15 minutes a day, that you are going to get the majority of the health benefits as someone who does high intensity exercise every day. So, you know, if Hannah's doing jujitsu and Joey's over there doing CrossFit and you're like, well, what about me? Like, I don't like to do anything, but I like to go on walks with my dog. If you like to do that, going on walks, just getting up and moving, move your body. Doesn't have to be super difficult. Doesn't have to be super challenging. Also, if you are in the position where you know someone or you have the luxury and you have the resources to hire someone, people, one of my pet peeves is the number one prescription that any doctor should be pulling out of their drawer in their medical office should be one to work with a personal trainer, a fitness coach. If you like, if you're a social person, take group types of classes. There are so many things out there and there are so many personal trainers that are eager to teach you what to do. I just had a guy in my chiropractic the other day who he's coming off of an injury. I'm doing my job. I'm helping him feel better. And I was so glad that he brought it up to me. He said, you know, I'd like to get in shape, but you know, I feel really funny. I go to a gym and I don't know what to do with the machines. And I said, you know what? I know a really great personal trainer and I know someone who I think even personality wise, like I think you guys would be buddies. So I'm going to set you up with my friend who's a personal trainer. He's gone to him 3 times now and he said, oh, it's great. You know, we talk about bands and we talk about music a lot. And it's nice because I work one-on-one with him in this situation and there's no one looking at me and there's no one judging me. And you know, he's a professional and I'm the novice just learning. So, you know, get up and move. And if you want to really take yourself to the next level and you have the finances to do it, I think it's well worth your money to invest in your own health to take care of yourself. So those are my little keys there. And Hannah, thanks for having me around and I appreciate you here and look forward to watching you and your career and all of this grow. You know, you've already done a very impressive job with everything that you've put together. And I know that you're taking it very seriously. And I know that you're very passionate about it. And I'm excited to see, you know, who you talk to and who you inspire over the years.
Thank you. And honestly, I'm so inspired by you because like when I hear you tell your story, I'm like, that's what I'm trying to do. Like just allow my life to be able to make an income with helping people or just do something where it's passion and I get to stay in that state. And to hear you do it and be where you're at and share those struggles that you shared, it's like, okay, I can do it. Yeah, I can. Yeah. I just got to keep going because, yeah, certain things suck sometimes, but just keep going. So you give me so much hope, and I'm so thankful that the way that you promote your chiropractic art, it's like, yeah, these athletes are getting helped, Everybody knows who you are at my gym. Yeah. This kind of health is being promoted so well. And all it does is just makes everyone better. And that is elevating. Like, we're both on that mission. People are getting better. And I'm just thankful for you that display that example. Like, absolutely. People are watching and you're inspiring people. Yeah.
And I'm telling you, a couple years down the road, you're going to have people that are going to say that you inspired them to go into business and chase their dreams. So just keep pushing.
Yes. Thank you guys so much for listening. This is Elevate Today podcast. I hope you have a lovely day and thank you for listening. Goodbye. That was awesome.
Good stuff, Hannah.